Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Andy Gresh and Rich Keefe. This is Gresh and Keefe on EEI.
Over the Panther line. Here's Taylor Hall. Scores! What a shot! Here's Hall for the Devils. He's got Zaka cutting. Hall for Zaka. He scores! It is Ajax centering Taylor Hall and Kyle Palmieri. Here's Hall. Pulls it back. Here's Hall streaking down the left wing. Gathers this. Pass into the slot. Palmieri steps up. Shoots. He scores!
For Jordan Osterley. Now to Taylor Hall.
Rips one. He scores! Oh my goodness, Taylor Hall!
Well, the Bruins no longer all alone in that second line. It's Taylor Hall coming into the rescue. And a use, I think it's a first Halsey reference.
You knew that wouldn't get by John. John was going to do Halsey.
He couldn't wait to get that in there. Final hour of Gresh and Keefe as we hand it off early to Red Sox baseball today here on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Hey, listen, we know a lot of you have already made the switch. Tell a friend about, the midday takeover, Gresh and Keefe, here on WEEI, the WEEI Sports Radio Network. And will the Bruins be taking over the Eastern Conference come playoff time? Because it was 11:57 last night, or right around there, that it was confirmed Don Sweeney is jumping on the Zoom call. And when you jump on the Zoom, you know that you're confirmed. Mm-hmm. The trade was made for Taylor Hall, a former MVP, a guy who is not just having a down year, Keith, an awful, abysmal year. However, this could end up being one of the greatest, I don't know, like back from the dead stories that we've ever seen if Taylor Hall comes here and looks like the guy he was in the Peter Chiarelli Edmonton years.
I understand that he is having a horrible year, and yet I'm still really excited about the trade. And it's funny, that little highlight montage that you heard coming back, clearly, you had to dip into previous years because he's only scored 2 goals this season.
Jeez.
At first, I'm like, I just heard a 3rd goal in there. That couldn't have been from this year. In fact, it's Devil's Days and everything else. But I do think he is a type of guy who he signed a 1-year deal and he played like crap. But it's almost like a get out of jail free card because you're going from an irrelevant team, a team that is at the bottom of the standings, and you're going to be playing in playoff games this year.
And a toilet of a city.
I'm not going to pile on Buffalo right now. They've gone through enough. But so he comes here, and what were the other names that were out there? It was like Kyle Palmieri, who got traded last week to the Islanders, and who else? Like, what other teams were going to be giving up true top six forwards? And yes, he has sucked this year, but he was the league MVP 3 years ago.
Well, there you go. Is he still a top six forward is the question I think a lot of fans and analysts will be asking.
On this team, he is.
I would agree. Yeah. I think he is regardless.
Yeah.
But I think here it's the whole he'll have the commensurate numbers to maybe prove it.
Yeah, well, that's what it's going to be. And I don't know if they're going to go with the let's load up Krejci with Pastrnak and Taylor Hall, or do you say, you know what, we're going to leave Pastrnak up with the other two guys and maybe you're playing with Craig Smith or whatever the trio is. I'd be interested in a Pastrnak, Krejci, Taylor Hall line. And if Hall can't get something going there, then all right, then it's not meant to be. And, you know, he's probably going to have to sign for much less next year, and it won't be here. But who knows? Maybe he comes in and fits in. You know, they signed Charlie Coyle, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think he was in the last year of his deal when they traded for him a couple of years ago, and then they re-signed him, and the up and down, right? He hasn't always been lights out, but I think you've gotten more good than bad from him. So he could be a part of the future, but I think what it really does is it tells the team that, hey, even though you're in fourth place in the division and there's been issues with all kinds of injuries and we haven't necessarily always played our best, we're going for it this year. This is it. We think we can win. That's what Don Sweeney's telling the team. We think we can win it this year. Otherwise, I'm not trading for guys on the last year of their deal.
Now, I do think that acquiring Hall, it was clearly his value was way down. And he goes for Anders Bjork, a second-round pick. And, oh, by the way, Buffalo's paying half of the money for Hall right to come play here, which in this organization is a pretty big deal. But it also, I think, kind of sets a value. It's like, okay, we like this player, but not at that number. And if Hall is going to be here in the future, if he plays up, then obviously that salary could go up. But you mentioned that, yeah, if he doesn't play well, then maybe his future isn't here. I wonder about that. Like, I wonder if now, just like he's a buy low candidate, say they go to the second round and lose, and Hall starts to, quote unquote, you love this, figure it out along the way.
Hey, all right.
And then it's okay, we can sign this guy to a 3-year deal at $15 million and give him $5 million per year. And maybe you end up getting a steal on the guy who is now starting to maybe crest and head towards the back nine of his career because he's only 29 years old, but he's been playing in the league for 10 years now.
Yeah, and it's one of those guys, you come into the league as the number one overall pick, you already have these lofty expectations no mm-hmm. matter what, and then you do have a season back in 2018 where he puts it all together, I think it was like 93 points in 76 games, and you're saying, all right, he's the league MVP, he's lived up to it. But then since then, has not been great. And even prior to that, it wasn't like he was a Hart Trophy finalist. Like, that was the one year that he really peaked. I think he was 26. And then since then, it's like, he's bounced around on a couple of different teams. Not exactly a franchise player. One year.
Do you think that year's an anomaly? Because he did have some good years in Edmonton before that year, and he really popped.
Yeah, I think it is an anomaly as far as, you know, him being a true MVP candidate. But there's a big difference between being a 39-goal scorer and a 9-goal scorer, which is like what he's on pace for now, or even less. So there's probably somewhere in the middle where you can still be a valuable player. And I think the contract will be interesting next year. And not that we have to figure that out now, but he's used to making a lot of money. He's right. Used to being a high-profile player. But you're nowhere near as good as Pastrnak, Bergeron, or Marchand. And those guys all make in the sixes. And you just signed a one-year, $8 million deal with Buffalo. They traded you and had to pay half your salary. So I don't know what he's going to command. Although, you play really well from now through the playoffs, and people are always what you did most recently.
He'll be here.
I think he'll
be here because there's money coming off the roster in theory. Now, some of that might also be tied into what happens in other positions. Do they believe that Swayman can be the guy? Will Halak stay here for short money, or does that guy get the itch at some point and says, hey, man, I got to break out. I'll play right behind Tuukka Rask is one thing. I'm not going to sort of, you know, maybe in his mind, lower himself to play behind Jeremy Swayman if that's the guy that they decide to go with next year. And it's, you mentioned that this is Don Sweeney going for it. I agree, but I also think he's sending a message at the same time. All these older guys are now on notice. David Krejci, you're on notice. Tuukka Rask, you're on notice. You know, anybody who is in the final year of their deal, I think business just picked up for them in a good or a bad way, because if you're one of these guys on an expiring contract and you play great down the stretch, maybe you can kind of reconfirm your value and stay near your salary point. Or you're just going to play terrible, and it's going to be much easier for people to call this radio station or to be able to contact with us on Twitter at Gresh Keefe and to say, hey, man, it's just time. It's just like Chara. Great guy. Love him. But with Krejci, sort of the same deal. You just got to rip the Band-Aid off and let him go because you need more productive players.
But I think at the very least, you're telling Tuukka and Krejci, even if it is your last year, we're going for it. We're not just throwing away your last year and saying, our team's out there and maybe we hit, strike lightning, but I doubt it. I doubt, or lightning will strike. I really doubt it. Whereas you add a couple of pieces. They even the addition of Mike Riley, you need another defenseman because of all the injuries. You're saying, all right, we're going to put it out there, and we are going to truly try to compete with everybody else in the East. That Washington team that just smacked you around yesterday, the Islanders, whoever we face in the playoffs, we are in a better position for it. And you're not wasting a year of Bergeron and Marchand in their prime.
But I wonder if other teams are looking at it and going, uh-oh, the Bruins finally got their piece. It's like, hey, I wonder if the rest of the league looks at Taylor Hall, whereas we're looking at, and by the way, I think we've been fair to the kid. He's having a down year on a brutal team in what appears to be a very brutal environment. And we recognize that he could be good, but if this is who this guy has become, then this thing could ultimately blow up in Don Sweeney's face in a very big way. But I wonder if you're another team in the division or another team in the East, do you say, well, god dang, now that second line for the Bruins is going to be good, and I need to strengthen my defensive depth? Or if you're, exactly.
I bet they are. I mean, I know personally, if he went to another team, knowing that he has struggled in Buffalo, but if he went to another contending team, I would have said,
laughing.
No, I wouldn't. I would not. I would have said, all right, that's a good addition, because if anybody goes from bad stats on a bad team to good stats on a good team, doesn't he fit the mold? Like, he's proven that he can play well in the league, and it's not that long ago. He's the best. Like, he wasn't, he made like an all-star team, or he made a Pro Bowl. He was the MVP of the entire league 3 years ago.
Big deal.
That is significant. Now, that was also his only 30-goal season. It was 39 goals, as it were, but he had never even hit 30 prior to that, and he has not been as good since. And for a guy who's the number one overall pick, he's been on four teams in whatever it is, 12 years. Or this will be his fifth team, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
This is his fifth team. Like, so he's jumped around a little bit. But again, the expectation isn't, hey, you need to be a 50-goal scorer like Pastrnak, or you need to be an all-star winger like Marchand. Like, no. You just need to be better than Nick Ritchie and Craig Smith and Jake DeBrusque. And I think he can do that.
When you said he's a former MVP, the first thing I thought of was, so is Cam Newton.
Cam Newton was. That's a good point, actually. You know?
No, but the MVP was just 3 years ago, and this is a guy who at 30 or 29, I think he is still now. Yeah, that's amazing that this guy has that level of experience, and he's only 29 years old. Red Sox baseball comes your way at the top of next hour here on WEEI and the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Don't forget WEEI.com, Odyssey.com. The Dork Podcast drops tomorrow.
Hashtag Dork Podcast.
Keith and Davey will be breaking down Godzilla versus Kong, and I have a funny feeling there might be some WrestleMania chatter in there, which Keith and I will end up getting into next. The Red Sox are the hottest team in baseball. I know we talked about them last hour. Is 6-0 over the last six games. They've gone on a hell of a run, and now they head to Minnesota. And I know they have to get some games in there. Like, they can't avoid Minnesota the whole month of April. But damn, middle of April, here go the Red Sox. Right?
Boston or Minnesota?
Thank you. I don't know what's worse. Only place colder than around here is there in Minnesota. But yet the Red Sox are getting underway at 2:05. They're red hot. J.D. Martinez is completely on fire. You got Rafi Devers is starting to turn it around a little bit. Bullpen had to be used yesterday in a game you hoped you were going to be able to save them. But right now, so far, so good.
I think if they were 3-6 or even 4-5, they might have been left for dead by a lot of people. They would have been an easy team to ignore. But you rip off six straight wins after getting swept by the Orioles, and you have to pay attention. Yep. And by the way, it helps that they're pretty entertaining and likable. And again, it should be, just wins and losses. All right, that's part of it. But also, tuning in and J.D. Martinez could homer three times in the game. Or seeing what Xander Bogaerts is up
Xander
to.
Xander
effing Bogaerts.
Love it.
Like, and, okay, I don't like Garrett Richards, but there's 24 other guys on the roster that seem to be, you know, kind of going in the right direction and are giving you reasons to either tune in on the radio or on the TV or whatever. And so it's only nine games into the year, but I think they got some people back because they were ready to be written off after going 0-3, after a lost season, and let's face it, even a really disappointing 2019 season. So they've kind of put that behind them. They can only
burn them!
Let's go!
Oh, we got something!
Oh, yes, I do. According to both Pierre LeBrun and Bob McKenzie, Of course, NHL trade deadline day here on Gresh and Keith.
Hey,
the Blackhawks have acquired Adam Gaudette from Vancouver, and it sounds like Matthew Highmore is going from Chicago to Vancouver as part of the deal. So, Gresh, your immediate thoughts on Gaudette for Highmore?
That means Chicago will be out for 2 weeks bringing in a member of the Vancouver Canucks because now they're all going to get the COVID.
Good breakdown there. That team was ripe with it.
I mean, like, they just didn't have one or two guys where it was, we could still battle on.
No,
like,
yeah, with half
Evan,
the team.
Like, right now, Evan Fournier is in the protocol, right? Oh, let's just
hanging
pluck
out.
Him out of there and we'll keep playing.
Nope.
No, in hockey, they had to pretty much shut the Canucks all the way down.
That's the other thing I'm curious about with the Mike Riley trade is when he's going to be eligible to play. Because wasn't that one of the hang-ups, trading with Canadian teams and things like that?
Oh, yeah, that's
so
right.
I don't know how that's going to – I haven't read the details on how that's all going to play out, but
– yeah, that's a good question.
I don't think he'll be as ready as quickly as Taylor Hall, but I could be wrong. Maybe they've changed some of those protocols a little bit. But again, if any trade breaks between now – well, we're only on until 1, but the trade deadline is at 3 o'clock today – and you'll get...
Does that mean Will Fleming would have to call for the sounder during Red Sox baseball?
We're going to leave the sounder with him. We told Ben we would leave the sounder with those guys. Joe Castig could break down a hockey trade, if need be.
Could you imagine that?
Oh, yeah. That would be great.
I hear he shoots left, but plays on the right. Ball two. I mean...
Yeah, great. Throw it in there.
Mixing it in there.
Yes.
You know, I think Braves, last half of the second inning.
Angry Lou breaking it down,
if need be.
Oh, I wanted that defense.
Can you believe this?
Yeah, no, right. Not at all. So
I'm more for Gaudette.
As we get back to the Red Sox, you know, the Twins last year, Keith, were great at home, 24-7. And they pretty much raked at home. Mm-hmm. I don't know how, again, it's COVID year. I don't know how much to really buy into that. Here's the one thing I do about Minnesota is, you know, they're just young. They've got a lot of young, unproven guys. They got high-end talent. Buxton's really good. They can hit. So is this going to, you know, are the Red Sox going to be able to keep that run total down a little bit so they don't completely decimate the pitching staff? And let's hope they're not winning a bunch of games 14-9. As much as it would be interesting for all of us to be able to watch, you go through that in a week and burn your bullpen, and the next thing you know, for 10 games, you're completely sideways.
I still think that's what it comes down to. The last six games, I think the offense is legit. I think the offense is going to be one of the better run-scoring teams in all of baseball. But the pitching staff, like, okay, Nick Pivetta, how long is this going to last? You know, Martin Perez, I wouldn't be surprised if he got shelled today. Garrett Richards, I have very little faith in. And then Eovaldi and Rodriguez are two guys that when they're out there, you're like, okay, great, but how many starts are they going to make? That's what it always comes down to. Like, they might combine for 30 starts, let alone both make 30 starts.
What'd you make of Erod over the weekend against the O's? I thought for the whole first time out, pretty good. He looked good. The biggest thing for me was I figured, all right, if he went four innings and they got him on a pitch count, okay, fine, I would understand that. I think it was 5 1/3 he ended up with, but we didn't hear the dreaded next day, oh, his arm was cranky.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
I was waiting for that. Yeah, oh, he feels
too.
A little tingly or whatever. You're like, oh, here we go again.
His elbow bulked up or whatever.
Because he already missed
the
start, right? Like, kind of, like, oh, well, he's back in there. But think about it. They had all offseason to prepare him. They had all spring to prepare him. Then they're like, oh, it's dead arm. And then we were talking to Bradford. And he's like, everybody gets dead arm. I'm like, well, none of these other opening day starters did.
And then sure enough, like a week later, he was out there.
And then he was out there, but still he missed a turn. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see on those guys. They've all been kind of extra fragile over their careers.
There you go, Brad Foe. The Celtics had a weekend, and we asked in hour one, are you taking the cheese after the Celtics had an impressive win against a Jamal Murray-less Denver Nuggets yesterday? I just look at it this way in terms of a step forward for the Celtics. They beat a good Western Conference team. They weren't complete. Denver wasn't complete. Fine, I'll take it, because within that win, there were a lot of good things, including we saw some defense in the third and fourth quarter, and they did a good job of really making it frustrating on Nikola Jokic there in the first half.
Yeah, even without Murray, that's a good team. It's a tough place to go in and win, so I give the Celtics all the credit in the world for that one. That really was. That was a good win. But again, I feel like this team kind of takes a step forward, or we think, you know, whatever issues they've had in the past, it's over with, and then they'll go out there and just lay an egg. And you say, well, what is this? And so it's three straight wins. It's been sort of different kinds of ways to win. They grinded it out against the Knicks, and you know, hey, you'll take that. A game in which, again, it's highlighted by the 53 points from Jason Tatum, but they still had to go to overtime to beat a 13-win Minnesota Timberwolves team at home. You're like, that's kind of a head-scratcher, but a win's a win.
Right.
And you can't complain with wins because they've been 500 this year. And then Denver. So it's just a brief three-game road trip, but to start it out with a win like that and to limit Jokic, to your point, and at one point a 31-3 run.
That's amazing.
Like, that's insane. Like, against any opponent, let alone an actual good team on the other side. So, I don't know. Maybe the Tatum and Brown little conference had maybe that worked a little bit. They're also doing this without Evan Fournier. So my other thought is, all right, are you going to have to now work him back into the rotation? Is that going to screw things up at all? It seemed like he had a delayed start, just got started. He was had a couple games where he looked all right, and then he's just out of the lineup again. And it's sort of TBD on when he's going to return. But everybody else is trying to find their roles, whether it's, you know, Time Lord continuing to start, or you know, whether it's Romeo Langford even getting a few minutes here and there. Like
We'll get to Romeo Langford later. But the one dude I did want to mention was Tristan Thompson.
Yeah.
Played about 20 minutes last night. To me, it wasn't so much what he did from the field. It's that presence. Like, his
presence. I remember
every
name because I'm like an elephant.
He's an elephant. He is. His presence stood out in that Knicks game where it was okay.
He was good.
But even matching up a little bit against Jokic yesterday, you know, he was competitive. He was in there. He is, you know what he is? I was trying to think of what is like that comparison. When Tristan Thompson is right, he is, I think, a little like Rodney Harrison in that he's Woody Woodpecker. He'll drive you nuts. Like, Tristan Thompson is the kind of guy on the floor that other guys don't want to play against because I could see him doing those little things that drive guys crazy.
Yeah, a little Marcus Smart-ish, right, for like a big guy.
Right.
A little bit of that on the line.
A little instigator. A little, hey, I'm not – like a part of his success is to kind of sort of like mess with you or maybe jab you along the way a little bit.
And that's why I think even though the league is so three-point reliant, there is still something to be said for a big guy who can rebound, sort of clog up the lane a little bit, a couple of hard fouls. Not that there's a lot of hard fouls in the NBA anymore, but you know my point.
Just four rebounds and three fouls last night. But to your point, three fouls in 20 minutes, that's not your prototypical.
No.
Normally guys are running away from contact.
Like, you do need a physical guy. You can't have five finesse players on the floor. You still need a little something in there, and he kind of gives you that. And, you know, Daniel Tice, for his credit, tried that while he was here, a little undersized, did the best he could. But now that you've moved on to sort of a Time Lord and Tristan Thompson combo up front, I think that's pretty good. Again, there are better big men for sure in the league, but for what they have, because they are such a perimeter, you know, based team, and like their strength is with Tatum and Brown, you know, those two guys haven't been bad, and at least they're not going to kill you, right? Like, there's been times where really post Kevin Garnett where some of their big guys have just really let them down, whether, you know, Al Horford some of those years, or even some of the guys that weren't making as much money.
I know that you had brought this up a little bit earlier, but it bears repeating. The quote from Jason Tatum after the game on Friday where he scores his 53 and mentions the scoring 53 and the milestone first before being, oh, yeah, we also won the game as well. It was like that was kind of the afterthought.
And then when he said, I forget what the exact wording of it, but it was like, and to score 50 at this age, too. And I'm like, what? Like, why are you aware of that? What is the point? There's a great scoring night. It's a career high. That's exciting, right? And it was the last Celtic to score 50-plus since Isaiah Thomas, who, by the way, did it in a playoff game, in a playoff win, which is even more important
than
an overtime win against the Minnesota freaking Timberwolves. But whatever, you
and
scored 53.
Traded him for Kyrie.
And he's like, oh, yeah, and we got the win on top of it, so that was nice. It's like, no. You won, and you got 53. But I don't know if you're going to change that at all. Like, that's just kind of
no, but
there's more
guys
in the league like that than not.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the problem that we're all fighting for. Those of us who are waiting for, you know, Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans, and all that stuff.
No, I know.
And a little bit of that mentality, that's kind of what the Celtics are fighting. And that's also, like, even though that's a little window and a snapshot into the mindset of Jason Tatum, I wonder if that is something that on the outside, we're still, as fans, unwilling to accept that that's the mindset of the modern-day player.
Yeah.
Whereas with Danny Ainge, it might be like the old-school guy in Danny Ainge, rolls his eyes at it, but has just like understood that it's a reality of the times in which we live.
I think it's definitely a reality, and you just need to figure out the best way to win with that. Because I think it's the old, like, there are a lot of players, Would you rather be a Hall of Famer or on multiple title teams?
Hall of Famer all the way.
I think most would say that.
Yep.
I think most would.
In that league.
Yeah, in that. Oh yeah, 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 for sure. I bet you'd find it in some other leagues too. I bet football there's some of it. But again, it's not like it's unique to Jason Tatum at all, but it's like, all right, how do you take this group and how do you figure out how to win as many games as possible, whether he's scoring 50 or not? How do you win more games?
And I'm amazed that in the NBA there are still so many guys that are of that mindset, considering the money is locked. Like in the NFL, I could understand why a receiver would want to get to a certain metric heading into free agency because right. of the if you can get to 90 or 100 catches in a year
well,
and then
I'll
go
tell
into
you,
free agency.
It's the all NBA metric. They do. They can trigger more money if they're
because
all NBA because they get the super max on top of whatever they get, or they sign their deal and then it can only grow if you grab an all NBA team or win MVP. So
it's Michelle Roberts' fault that she
was
put this
say,
into the CBA.
Let's take it like a step further. Like it kind of is. Like if that part of it and if the individual accolades are going to trigger more money, then like you almost can't blame some of
Absolutely.
These guys.
All right. WrestleMania was over the weekend and well, the star was a rapper. I'll let that stand there, and Keith and I'll get into that after Shime Trends.
More Gresh and Keith right now on WEEI.
Get some, buddy!
I mean, Bad Bunny is about to get some, fucker.
This is your moment. This is your WrestleMania moment, Bad Bunny.
Bunny's going to go up to the top rope. I said it before. Yeah. Bunny's fly.
You know, as a color analyst myself, Rich Keith, Byron Saxton blows, and
stinks.
I could do such a better job than that guy. It's terrible, but Byron Saxton with the whole, oh, it's your WrestleMania moment, Bad Bunny, because that's
hitting
clip.
You over the head with it.
They'll
just
put it on,
you,
right? Yeah. Oh, Mary Hart on Entertainment Tonight or whomever's doing it now, Lara yeah. Spencer, whomever. That's what they're going to lead with, but WrestleMania down in Tampa the last two nights, and the star of the show really was rapper Bad Bunny, who was teaming with Damian Priest against The Miz and John Morrison. Now, The Miz is Rich Keefe, the pro wrestler.
That's right.
So The Miz went on reality TV.
On The Real World, then he was on the MTV Challenge.
And then, boom, Vince.
They want to be a wrestler.
And now Vince McMahon loves him, put the title on him for, like, you know, a couple days as a transition champion to shake up WrestleMania. But this is where Miz, who's a crossover guy,
right.
but they got Bad Bunny to start the match. And normally it is, the wrestlers do their thing. You know, they bring in Snooki for a high or low spot like they
right.
did a couple years
yeah, yeah.
ago, and then boom, see you later. Bad Bunny worked like the first 9.5 minutes of this match.
He was pretty good. But let me, a bigger picture question. Do you like the celebrity tie-ins to WrestleMania? Because I know they did it originally, but they also needed to do it originally. Like WrestleMania 1, 2, and 3, they would get Mr. T or they would get whoever. And it made sense because it wasn't as popular as it is now.
Yeah.
I feel like now it's not as necessary. Like there are people, like they're making a big deal because like Logan Paul was on there for like a second. And they're like, oh, he's got 23 million YouTube subscribers.
There you go.
All right, that's a lot. But a lot of these wrestlers have millions of followers, too. It's not like it's like we never see them. They're on TV all the time. I don't know if you need these crossover movie or reality stars.
I hate Logan Paul. I'm out on it. You know, my kid, well, really my youngest, who's much more wise ass, is the one who always wants to buy the fight. So he'd be like, oh, maybe he'll get knocked out. I'm like, I'll see it on Twitter.
So how come
like, but
nobody likes him, but he has 24 million YouTube subscribers?
Well, because
how's that
it's
work?
Because it's mostly people under 25 or
got
those
it.
Who haven't grown up yet.
All right.
Who are watching that stuff on YouTube. And if you're a big Logan Paul fan, like, I'm sorry. I hope I didn't offend you. However, like in 20 years, yeah. you're going to wake up in life and go, oh, okay, now I see
doing?
The light. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
But that guy, I actually looked it up because I thought same thing as you. I'm like, what are they doing here? So Logan Paul was a part of that whole like Tyson Roy Jones deal. I do believe it was. Like, he was
he the one that beat up Nate Robinson?
He knocked out Nate Robinson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nate Robinson got smoked.
But there is the whole, okay, that guy was a part of moving X amount of pay-per-views. And, you know, you're trying to get to sign people up for Peacock. And, oh, by the way, you still could have gone onto your cable provider and spent $89.99, I think it was, for the HD version of WrestleMania.
Oh, it's still a pay-per-view option?
Yeah, even when they had WWE Network, they were still... Now, I don't know
if... Peacock's like $3 a month or whatever.
Well, I think it was one of those. Maybe in America it was exclusive to Peacock,
but there's
the whole around-the-world piece. Like, we're very... Hey, we're in our own mind. We're in our own world here. But WWE is a global brand. Like,
oh yeah, that's on everywhere. Yeah.
The great Khali shouldn't sniff the WWE Hall of Fame.
He's in there.
But everybody in India went crazy and went to buy the pay per view or went to sign up for WWE Network all because of it. So, like, I've gone from the hey, it's no longer a wrestling show. It is and look, like half of the people there. I like the Bianca Belair match at the end.
Yeah, it was great. Okay. Night one, that was the highlight of the whole weekend.
What I didn't need was her a minute and a half in having a WrestleMania meltdown in the middle of the ring and taking me out of the moment.
But that was the moment.
No,
you're missing it. That was the moment.
Was the
end.
It was.
So she's a healer of face. She's a face, right? People like her. So one of the reasons they like her, they can relate to her, and she's in the ring and she's blown away because she is main eventing WrestleMania. So
she told me she was going to win. That's what that did, though. That's why it pissed me off.
Well, not necessarily, because Sasha Banks is also really happy at the end of the night, too, and she lost. So I think just being in that position to main event WrestleMania, it was headlines on all these different news outlets, too. Did you notice that? Everywhere. It was like Bianca Belair wins WrestleMania 37 in the main event on Saturday night. I understand what you're saying because you're like, all right, you're taking him out of it a little bit because she's reacting already. But it's almost like, you know, it's like a kid in Little League who hits a home run and can't hide the smile rounding second base. Like, he's already like, I did it.
Hit the home run first.
But it's such a big moment. And the fact that fans were back for the first time and they said 1 year, 1 month, and 1 day since they had fans at a wrestling event, that was such a big deal for them. And it wouldn't have been like that if it was in front of those monitors and it was just this, you know, like they've been doing for a year now.
There's no doubt that is a part of it,
so
the ambiance.
You get the huge entrance. They had all the fans up front. I don't know what the capacity was or whatever, but
25 at each night, apparently.
Okay.
Right around there.
So right where the Tampa Bay Bucks play. And they were going crazy. I thought it was a good moment. I thought that was probably, if you're just looking at Saturday and Sunday, I think that was the highlight of the whole weekend.
I'm trying to think now. I mean, look, that was a really special moment because you could tell that they're putting the rocket ship onto her. If you're a wrestling fan, there's the whole, you know, like...
It is a little surprising they went both, like, younger or... I shouldn't say younger because Belair is actually older, as you pointed out, than
Sasha
Banks
is.
But as far as like newer, like rookies, if you will, like they put the belt on both of the rookie women, which is kind of odd.
But Bianca Belair feels like... Even though I quibbled with some of the performance and the whole her, like, you know, Roman Reigns knew he was going to win, but he was like, he's soaking in the WrestleMania
moment.
He's a bad
guy. He's a bad guy. He's supposed to act like a bad guy.
But he's also been there before.
Right.
So I'll give her a little bit of the benefit of the doubt that she might have got overwhelmed by the enormity of that moment. But Rhea Ripley.
You don't like her?
No.
What's wrong with not to like?
It's so forced. Like, with Bianca Belair, there are natural movements with her within her character that are very natural.
How about that hair whip?
Oh, my God.
Did you see the mark it left on Banks?
I wonder what that looks like today. It had to hurt like hell.
Oh, that was gross. Yeah, it was a good move. I wonder if they'll go back to that.
Rhea Ripley feels like Bianca Belair is reacting when she's wrestling, whereas Rhea Ripley... I need to remember to stomp right here.
Like a robot?
You know what I mean?
Like
it is. She's robotic.
Her intro entrance was sick, though, because the band that does her song, they did it for a few wrestlers.
Yep.
The band performs the song live as they go to the ring. Kind of like that. That's a nice little detail.
I dug it. And then she like looked around. It's the whole, all right, now here's remember what to do. After they play this, you look to the right, and then you look to the left, and you take your big stomp, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, like, it's choreographed, so she's got to remember. It's like an actor going through the lines, you know?
But the great ones, like Edge took in that moment and didn't lose me. Now, I know he'd been there before. He was great.
Did you see what all the smarks are saying?
Oh, what now?
So Edge and Randy Orton used to be tag team partners, Rated RKO.
Uh-huh.
And they were in separate matches wearing matching like outfits.
They were both in white.
They were both in like the white and the red. What does that mean? Also, I need people, you can tweet me at Keith21. I need an explanation because I have not been watching like weekly wrestling in a super long time.
Okay.
I'll dip in on some of the pay-per-views. So I love Bray Wyatt. I love that character. It's just off the charts. It's very cinematic. It's more that than it is anything else.
The new Undertaker.
He has a mask designed by Tom Savini, who's one of the great like makeup artists in the history of or in like costumes and stuff.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, I did like Dawn of the Dead, like The Walking Dead, like all these shows, like these crazy masks. So anyway, that match lasted like 5 minutes, and it got stopped because Alexa Bliss. First of all, he comes out in a giant Jack in the Box,
which was like, awesome.
Like that was like creepy.
Like that was dope.
They do the whole match in like this tinted red lighting. But the match was like 5 minutes, and then he gets distracted by Alexa Bliss, who's like bleeding like black blood out of her head. And then the next thing you know, he gets RKO'd, loses, he looks at her, and then he disappears. And the crowd was like, what? And I just want to know what. So you can please tweet me and let me know what happened. What does this mean?
I'll give you
what's
a little,
happening?
I'll give you a little insight on it. So in the build-up with Alexa Bliss and Randy Orton,
okay.
Because they try to keep the Fiend very much off of television.
Doesn't wrestle
he's
a lot.
An attraction guy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I like his little vignettes. Those are very good.
Yeah, the Firefly Funhouse thing, though, I think is kind of aged out.
Maybe,
now
yeah.
He's turned into the Fiend, and it's a completely different character in a way. It's almost like Cactus Jack Dude Love.
Yes, yes, yes.
But they had that. So Alexa Bliss was kind of the conduit between in that storyline where she would come out and they did this like thing where it was almost like she threw this laser beam at one
okay,
point at Randy
right.
Orton and it like knocked him down.
Well, because didn't Randy Orton set Bray Wyatt on fire?
Yeah,
at one
point. Yeah, yeah. And maybe that was the day.
I love it.
It's like Matt Hardy in the, what is it, the whatever of deletion?
They had the compound match or whatever,
the lake
right?
of, lake of Renaissance or whatever the hell they called it. So Alexa Bliss and Randy Orton, they would have this deal where, like, Randy Orton would all of a sudden, like, almost like he's going to throw up. And that black stuff,
yeah,
he, like, popped the bubble in his mouth and would all come running down him, right? So the black stuff that you saw running down the face of Alexa Bliss, that was, like, Randy Orton multiple times on TV was, like,
stuff.
Hacking that up or something.
So we're going to find out she's the brains behind the whole thing.
I think so. And that's why there was the whole Sister Abigail thing. And they just had that, like, black stuff pouring. You could see it just pouring out of
like
the crown
it.
She was wearing.
It's good stuff. It's definitely, like, it's a movie, basically, with what that is. It's less that than it is a match.
They're building to, like, the cinematic sort of.
I would watch a Bray Wyatt movie. Yeah. Throw him in a movie. I'd watch that.
Absolutely. I think.
Burn him!
What?
You know what that means? It's NHL trade deadline day. We will break in at any point with a deal done. This one courtesy of Pierre LeBrun.
Braun Strowman to the Bruins.
Hearing that the Sharks trade Frederick Claesson to Tampa Bay for goalie prospect Magnus Crona.
Magnus
Incredible.
Crona. So, former Impact and TNA star Magnus will be going to the, yeah.
How about that? Nice little trade there. So it's hot and heavy. Deadline today at 3 o'clock.
Is that Nick Aldis now, I do believe, the NWA champion? He was Magnus.
That sounds right.
And Mickey James' husband, who has heat with WWE and can't get a job there, even though he's like one of the best-looking guys in the biz. Like, the guy's really good. Well, that's a Triple H thing, I think.
Got
There's
it.
A, you
There's
know, one of those.
Blocking that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
what it's going to be.
Some people are heat seekers in this world, and, you know, we pay for it.
What's
when you
like?
Get that yeah. heat. There you go.
Right.
But in terms of day one, day two, they pulled it off for WrestleMania. And on night one, I flip it on at 8 o'clock, and it's like 8:30. And I'm like, they're doing a ton of promos. Like,
yeah.
What's going on here? Apparently,
fight?
There was a massive rainstorm. And then they go out to Michael Cole and Samoa Joe, right? So Samoa Joe has gone from the Samoan submission machine to now a fireplug looking announcer, and they tried
I love
to
that
put,
guy though.
I do too. I think he's great, but they tried to put like the little poncho over him, and it was a little snug. Like he's the only like Cole's
yeah.
like swimming in his,
it was a
and with
tight.
Joe, it
yeah,
like fit
tight.
Perfectly. It's like
yeah,
what are we,
yeah they had like a 46 minute rain delay
yeah.
there, which is always a risk that they have when they do it at these stadiums.
And
like
it blew
that,
all of the cardboard fans. Like, it scattered them everywhere. So they had a Super Bowl set up, and
yeah,
then
right,
it
right,
kind of
right.
went away.
Yeah.
They also did that, it, what looked like a big board on the top of the stadium, but it wasn't. Apparently, they had covered it. I thought, I'm like, oh, my God, did they build, like, a giant board up there?
Oh, is that
but
all
it would have been
like,
raining. Like,
yeah,
it would have
yeah,
got.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had it, like, covered enough to where they were able to superimpose everything
oh.
like they do with
no,
the
CGI
and all that.
It looked good. It looked good.
That.
And just having the fans back was good to see.
Made all the
so,
difference,
yeah, yeah.
right?
That was good.
So a very good WrestleMania, and I thought Bad Bunny like stood out, which isn't
his own.
Good
yeah.
for any wrestlers.
No,
because
he's gonna take somebody's spot if he wants.
That's
it.
Exactly right. He probably could.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? 31 million Instagram followers alone. Vince McMahon be tripping over himself
uh-huh.
to get all that. Hey, you got something, and a Sophie's Choice for Rich Keefe. when it comes to awful former athletes or current athletes getting into team ownership. That's all next before we hand it off to Red Sox baseball.
We're back to Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
Red Sox baseball comes your way at the top of the hour here on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Odyssey.com app. For those of you who are in Boston Metro proper, you can listen to Red Sox baseball on the Odyssey app here inside the city of Boston. It is a big flex week for Gresh and Keith. Don't believe the original schedule, because the original schedule said that these are going to be night games. No, no, no. They are now all day games
day
against
baseball.
The Minnesota Twins. So off an hour early today, tomorrow, and Wednesday for us. Off 2 hours early on Thursday. We get to actually work 4 hours on Friday.
There we go. All right.
And then Monday, Marathon Monday, or what would traditionally be Marathon Monday, we'll be off for daytime Red Sox baseball.
All right.
We have a very busy week here with Gresh and Keefe. Follow us on Twitter at Gresh Keefe. Give Rich a follow at Keefe21. Give me a follow at The Real Gresh, Gresh. All right, so we had a lot to get to, so...
You got something?
Yeah, I...
Shime?
Let's get something first, considering he's been running between two studios and trying to figure out what the right hand is doing with the left. Shime, you got something.
I do, guys. So we got a text earlier in the show, right around the beginning of the show, from the 401. So all our Degeneration Bets guys out there, this guy was saying thank you for teaching me how to bet on the Masters properly.
How about that?
Broke up his $100 unit
nice.
Into five $20 bets.
Including?
He bet on Hideki Matsuyama
yeah!
to win. 50-1 claimed him a grand.
There we
Congratulations.
Go.
Congratulations.
Shout
That's
out to
right.
the guy
that
out there.
That is
on
really
the
nice.
Well done by him. Thank you for listening and paying attention to Degeneration Bets.
That is
wow,
a nice
that
win.
That really
there.
Is. And, you know, for all those Good. Who are like, for those who already know how to gamble,
right.
you know, they're the ones that are always like, what are you guys doing? And telling people. That's why.
That's why.
Because
look at that. If
a...
you can help one person out there, we have done our job, Gresh.
Oh, my
Just
God.
Just one person.
I can't believe you went there. With the whole, if I could just save
just watch,
one,
reach out and touch one person.
If we could just save
in a safe
better.
Way. Yeah. Good.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, I feel good about that.
John, do you got something?
I do. So we saw this headline earlier in the day, guys. Kevin James to play Sean Payton in movie based on 2012 Bountygate suspension. Now,
sure.
our reaction was it's going to be about Bountygate itself, but the headline... Bountygate suspension. Once you read the article, you see that this is going to be about Sean Payton coaching his kids' Little League team while he was suspended for the
I couldn't like this
season,
movie less.
So.
There's nothing about this that I want. First of all, I don't want to see Kevin James at anything.
You could
have stopped
right there,
right?
Right
there, right there, I'm out. A Sean Payton movie, whether it's Bountygate or how he spent his time while he was suspended, why is that a movie? Like, I know there's a lot
That's the most Kevin James movie, though.
I guess so, but I don't
know. Like, it's basically that episode of King of Queens where he coaches Little League, but it's the entire, it's a whole movie,
but
though,
like, hey,
instead
maybe,
of, like, 20 minutes.
If you weren't, you know, in charge of a team that was paying guys to hurt other players, maybe you wouldn't have been suspended, and then you go and coach your kid. Like, I don't care. What's, like, the big redemption story there? What's the what is the movie?
Him His suspension ends?
Yeah, and then he's back to being 7-9 with the Saints.
So do they highlight? I wonder if they're going to get into the details. And
who's playing Greg Williams?
Well, what I want to know is who would be playing the girlfriend, the former like Miss West Virginia. You remember the whole Sean Payton thing? That,
oh, I did not know.
Oh
this.
No, that Sean Payton.
Wait a minute.
I don't think his divorce will be in the movie because it did say in this article that he read through the script and made some edits before he let Netflix greenlight
okay,
it.
Because
so.
This movie's gonna be the worst.
So
oh, it's a Netflix movie too.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Wow. So I went to the Greenbrier in West Virginia over the summer.
Okay.
In-laws. And
yeah.
and first of all, it's an unbelievable facility.
Yeah.
But remember when the Saints like up and moved camp to the Greenbrier once or twice?
Well, the Patriots went there too a couple times.
They had
they?
To stop to do, there,
yeah,
I think,
yeah.
with some joint practices.
Right.
And there's an awesome infrastructure and facility set up there. But I do believe that after Sean Payton got divorced, I think the girlfriend, it was like Miss West Virginia
oh,
or something
wow.
like that. Anyway,
right.
they had this huge house up on the hill. So when you're at the Greenbrier and you look up into these like hills,
Oh.
You see these like houses pop up. One I think was owned by like Bubba Watson, and like supposedly Sean Payton had one. And like
maybe that'll be in the movie.
When you play at that course there at the Greenbrier, you have to have a caddy, right? I'm not a huge caddy guy. It's the first time I'd ever had it, but the guy was, you know, I was making jokes about how West Virginia is like the meth capital of the world. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, you can just go right down the street and get some meth. It's like, oh, I had no idea.
Meth Virginia.
Not that I knew, but. Right. And the guy was like telling us all these stories and all this stuff. So yeah, that's why I just kind of bring that up.
All right.
I'm a huge, I like Sean Payton a lot. Like, if Belichick were gone, okay, bring that guy in. He's a little impetuous when it comes to making personnel decisions. I don't know if I'd give him the whole store, but the guy can coach.
No. Yeah, I think he's a bit overrated. Yeah, too many 7-9 seasons for me.
Well, I mean, just the fact that when he did the draft last year, he was so mad at the NFL. I don't even remember what he was mad at them for this time, but he put every single competitor sponsor, that is, like, say Coke is a sponsor of the draft, he made sure there was a Pepsi in the shot of his draft.
What a child. Yeah, he was probably mad that they did the draft, because remember there was a bunch of guys who were like, I can't believe they're making us do a draft in these circumstances. And then it was awesome. You had the Zooms, you get to
I think that was like just Schefter, though. Well, Schefter said, like, there's carnage in the streets. We shouldn't be doing
well,
this.
Well, he heard from somebody, and then
somebody
at
ESPN
on
told him to shut up.
And then he did. He's like, actually, just kidding. This is so much fun. I love it.
Peyton is also a D.O.P., a disciple of Parcells.
Mm.
And that would be a very Parcellian move, a Coke-sponsored draft with him swilling Diet Pepsi.
The one thing, I mean, I did like Peyton because he was sort of an ally with the Patriots during the Brady thing, because he was like, yeah, the league screwed me. I understand what they're doing with you. Remember, didn't he wear... What did he wear? Was it either the clown shirt I think he wore?
It like might
the
Goodell
clown shirt he wore at one point, something like that.
He went all Matt Patricia on that.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely did.
And I do believe that is the whole story with Sean Payton. Well, anyway, this will be a terrible movie that no one will watch
if it's about him,
you know, if this is Little Giants rebooted with a suspended NFL coach. You know, bring back
Icebox.
Yeah, bring back Al Bundy. Keith, you got something.
Yeah, how about this? Evander Holyfield is returning to the boxing ring. He will be another one of these old guys taking part in an exhibition fight. He's going to take on Kevin McBride on June 5th. Holyfield's 58 years old. And yeah, he looks like he's in great shape, but what are we doing? Why is this a new thing though? Like Roy Jones and Mike Tyson didn't need to fight. These guys at the end of their careers were already like, all right, you shouldn't fight anymore. Why are we taking 20 years off and then going back in? And I don't know if he's going to be on a card with like the Paul brothers again. I don't think so. I don't think it's that.
Dear Lord.
But I don't know. Mike Tyson, at least kind of a little bit, there's intrigue there because it's Mike Tyson.
And he got into unbelievable shape.
He did, but I mean, sort of Holyfield, but I'm not going to pay money to see Evander Holyfield at 58 fight.
I'm not either, and you worry about that guy. Like, seriously, you know, those dudes took... Now, everything that we know about head injuries, and you think of the way those boxers, like, sparred and got pounded on, and some of the shots that Holyfield took. I mean, forget that his ears are half bit off because of Mike Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
All of the shots that guy took cumulatively, you know, you forget that Evander Holyfield was the cruiserweight champion... Before, I do believe Holyfield was fighting. It's cruiser. It's funny. I'm so wrestling trained for cruiserweight,
right?
But I do believe he was like the top cruiserweight, and then put on weight, went up to heavyweight to go make some real money.
Yeah, because he was an Olympic fighter too, right?
Yes.
Didn't he win the Olympics?
I might be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that he was like down a weight class for a while. But the point is that the guy's brain is
what they wanted to. According to Holyfield, Mike Tyson's camp turned down a $25 million guarantee for a Tyson-Holyfield fight back in Memorial Day weekend. Because Tyson ended up fighting Roy Jones, and it was sort of like, okay, whatever. But apparently Holyfield wanted to fight Tyson. I don't know why you would turn down $25 million, but maybe he thought Holyfield would... I don't know. I don't know why you would do that if you're looking for money.
It makes me wonder if Mike Tyson's got something else cooking, because the guy that they partnered with on that pay-per-view, apparently the guy was going to create like a celebrity boxing league or something.
That's what we need.
So, you know, who knows, right? Like,
yeah,
all
boxing.
Of a sudden it's Oliver McCall and
Tonya
Lennox
Harding.
Lewis. And oh, my God, we get going on that. Well,
you got something?
Yeah, I do have something. And I thought we had something great by saying that Romeo Langford was the cryptid. It's a word that you taught me. Yeah. He was this mythical creature.
Right.
And then now he's played for six straight games and started for one. So I ask you, is he a cryptid anymore?
No. I don't think so.
So, oh no.
I don't think so. He's a regular part of the team now. It's not like check the status if he's going to play. Some people have seen him. Some people haven't. Some people believe that he exists. Others don't. I feel like he exists now. Like,
you were
know
right,
for sure.
Though. Like, you were right. It was this mythical creature that we didn't know whether he existed or not. And
I think
now,
he does. Turns out he does.
Now, it's like 16 minutes. I think he played last night or something
and
like
he's
that.
He's in the rotation.
Like, so guy, now he's here. Plays.
I think so.
And I heard Scal like talking him up, you know, Romeo, he can maybe give some people some trouble. And blah, blah, blah,
I don't know
like
about
that.
Any of that just yet.
Yeah, I think right now it's the, does Romeo, like, is he going to play well enough to earn some minutes in the postseason? Like, we already have an idea of what Peyton Pritchard is and all that. So do we now have to have an official retirement ceremony, or do we just shelve this?
I think we shelve it.
Because there is a chance he could go back into the woods and go in hiding for a couple of months.
Where a lot of cryptids are is in the woods.
Is that really true? Like, the cryptids are in the woods?
I think
a lot
of them are. Like, you know, Bigfoot, people think is in the woods.
Do you think Bigfoot
Wendigo?
Exists?
Yeah. Oh, Bigfoot, Lord. Yeah.
Really?
I talked to a guy who killed two of them. Yeah, his name was Rick Dyer. He killed two. One the government took away, and then the other one he...
yeah! Yep, that's right!
And then the other one he lost.
What? Oh, how do you lose
well, I don't know.
An 8-foot Sasquatch?
It's big. Yeah. It's hairy.
Yeah.
So that guy,
and he killed him actually in the southeast, which I know a lot of people think they're in the Pacific Northwest, but they're actually all over the place. But
with his bare hands, or was he choking an alligator at the same time and then... poked this cryptid in the eye and then somehow shot him.
I don't know if it was a bow and arrow
and the
situation.
The alligator ate him.
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it was.
Would an alligator get a fur ball if they ate a Sasquatch?
Yeah, I would imagine, yeah.
You'd think so.
I would think so. It might even kill the alligator. Bigfoots are huge.
Nobody is wanting to kill Bigfoot.
So that was actually in Oklahoma. We had a madness a few months ago. They have a Bigfoot hunting season, but they made it very clear, just trap the Bigfoot, don't kill the Bigfoot. And there's a huge reward there. Wasn't it $1 million, John? It was $1 million.
I mean,
yeah.
God almighty.
There's a lot.
Some slack-jawed yokel out in Oklahoma has got his giant Bigfoot pit or something like that. Yeah, I mean, I can see this guy rotating between his skull and his, like, chewing tobacco. Yeah. I got me the greatest, what's that called again, Martha? Cryptid.
I got
me one of them Bigfoot cages, and we're going to catch me one of these. I ain't going to be like that dumbass who killed two of them, and one got away, and the other one done just magically combusted. Yeah. No.
It's big. Yeah. It's hairy.
We're going to cut this.
And one lawmaker is planning on giving you a bounty to find it.
Well, I'll tell you right now.
Well, there's a Bigfoot.
DW is a Bigfoot researcher,
and
Oklahoman who's been studying and hunting the species for decades.
And I've had 26 encounters that I can say was actually a Bigfoot.
26 encounters.
How much?
Now, it might be the same Bigfoot 26 times. Could be 26 different Bigfeet. He didn't really get into specifics there, but... pretty good.
How much crank is that guy on? Like, how, I mean, you know, listen, not
for nothing.
He just
has horrible vision.
I'm not like
Mad Dog. He's a hairy neighbor.
I'm not like Mad Dog where it's just a couple of gummies or something like that, right?
No.
Like, okay, I'm a partaker, but I don't know if there's anything that I could get into that would make me think that I would, a Bigfoot 26 times? That is some special kind of chewing tobacco that they got there in Oklahoma. Well, I'm glad we explored that because Kiefer Madness is tomorrow at 12:30.
Right. Who knows? Could be about a cryptid.
I would be excited if it were because now I need to learn about this world. Anyway, Red Sox baseball coming your way here at the top of the hour on the Red Sox Radio Network and the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Great job by Shime and Jom today. Normally I don't point them out, but it's been a little bit of a fire here. Good job by those guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Will the Red Sox make it 7 in a row? Join us at 10 o'clock. Don't be late. Red Sox baseball next.